Well, yesterday was Valentine's Day, and me and my wife, we celebrated, and I really felt from the Lord to just speak about love today and speak about our lover, Jesus. And I would love to start with a testimony that I heard a couple months ago, and I was just blown away by this testimony. And how many of you heard about the Jesus film? I'm just curious. Okay, amazing, a few of you. But there is this team that went to Northern India, a region that never heard about Jesus. And what they would do, they would go and they would share the Jesus film to the people. They would put on some, like a white sheet in the middle of the village. And then they would put a projector and they would show the Jesus film translated in their dialect there in Northern India. So this team went and they put the Jesus film. And then after the Jesus film, they would share the gospel with everyone. And people will give their life to Jesus, but they're a bit skeptical because you never knew in these parts how people are going to react. Like, are they going to be okay with it? Are they going to get mad? Like, what's going to happen? So this team goes there just trying to share the gospel to people that never heard it. They were a bit nervous and very excited. And as they show the movie is running, and then people from the crowd started to scream, "It's him, it's him, it's him." And they didn't know what's going on. They didn't understand at first. And someone translated for them that they're screaming, "It's him." And they're like, "Who do they think it is? Like, how do they know him? It was Jesus showing on the screen." And he was like, "How do they know it's him?" And they start to say, "It's him." The people start saying, "It's him. It's the man that's been walking around our village for the last 2 years in the mountains. And we've seen him over and over and over again. And it's Jesus. He manifested himself as the man from the movie and walked around the village just to prepare the way for these people when they come so people can receive Jesus." So if you think that you're not loved today, or if you think that Jesus is not loved today, I just want to let you know that he loves us. And not just that he loves us, he puts a target on us with love, and he loves to fill us with love, and he loves to pour his love on us. You know, he throws arrows of love at us over and over and over again because he loves us so much. And even from the beginning of our creation, he created us to love us. And he didn't create some robots that he wants to expand the kingdom and to go further, which we do this and it's amazing, but he created lovers first. And I think we need to understand the fact that we are loved and we live in an intimate relationship with him before we do anything else, because this is what he did, and this is what he created us for love and for intimacy. Even from the Garden of Eden, it was a place of intimacy, and he loves to love us. And we're going to jump into the passage that we wrote before in a second, but I just want to go into Genesis 1 at first, verse 26. It says that, "Then God said, 'Let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness, so that we may rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky, over the livestock and all the wild animals, and over all the creatures that move along the ground.'" So God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. And in verse 31 says, "God saw all that he made, and it was very good." And before he created the animals, and he created the stars, and he created the waters and everything, and he said it was good. And then he created the mankind in his image. And verse 31 said, he looked at all that he created now. Everything was complete with the man. And he said, "This is very good. What I created is very good." Before we were there, it was only good, and now it was very good. And he created us to have someone to be intimate with. He created us in his image. And he created us someone to co-labor with, to commune with, not just some robots that we need to do and we need to do, which is good. It's good to serve and it's good to go all in, and we're going to talk about that. But he created us first lovers. And in Genesis 2, we see that God tells Adam to name all the animals, which I think it was a crazy journey because there are so many animals and there are so many names that you need to give. But back then, and if you look throughout the whole Bible, we see that names actually have a different significance than probably today. And for God, the names actually, there was something significant that would define the nature. And he goes to Adam and he says, hey, you that I created you, the man of intimacy that I created you, I want you to give the nature of all the animals that are going to be, this is their nature that's going to be for thousands and thousands of years. I want you to define it, which is something so beautiful, right? It's something that we get to do life with him, in communion with him, and he desires us to do things with him together. And it all starts with love. And I want to speak today about Mary of Bethany. And we're going to go in Luke 10, 38. You can go there if you have your Bibles and follow me. We're going to read a bit more scripture today. I hope it's okay. It is church, so it should be okay. But Mary caught something, this Mary of Bethany. She caught something, and it feels like she had a special part in the heart of Jesus, that she understood something that people in her time, when Jesus was on the earth, maybe didn't understand. But she got it. She got something, and I want us to dive deep into what she got. And so we're going to read Luke 10:38 till 41. As Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary, who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparation that had to be made. She came to him and asked, Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me. And Jesus says, Martha, Martha, the Lord answers, you are worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed, or indeed only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her. Now, I want to be very clear what this passage does not mean. It doesn't mean we shouldn't serve. It doesn't mean we shouldn't do things for Jesus. It doesn't mean we shouldn't serve the people around us, just to make this clarify. We should continue to serve, and we should give things to Jesus. But I think Mary caught something. What's the most important thing? And I feel like sometimes, and I find myself oftentimes, I get so busy in serving Jesus and so busy in loving people and doing his work, that I forget to sit at his feet. That sometimes I go so out of my way to do good things that maybe he doesn't even ask for. And sometimes I get so busy to maybe serve in the worship team, and he's asking me not to. And I think there is, Mary caught something that is so important for us as a church to have to move forward, that there is truly only one thing needed, and that's to sit at his feet. And when you sit at his feet, and when you have intimacy with him, then things start to flow. Then love starts to flow, then joy starts to flow, but everything flows out of intimacy with him, and everything flows out of sitting at his feet and looking at his face. And all the things that flow, it's not a goal, right? Like, I'm not spending time with Jesus to have more love. I'm spending time with him because he gave it all, and because I can't do anything else but just look at his face and sit at his feet. I'm not spending time with him to be filled with joy, but I am being filled with joy because that's what he does. And I just want to say today, if you need love, just invite a lover into your heart. If you need peace, just receive the Prince of Peace. If you need joy, just receive the one who is joy. He's everything that we need, and he's everything that we don't want. And when we sit at his feet and look at his face, that's where it all starts. And my friend puts it this in a very beautiful way, and he told me, he said, in the intimacy between a man and a woman, there is a fruit coming out. Like when they are intimate, there's a fruit coming. There's a child coming, right? And between the intimacy of you and the Holy Spirit, there's always the fruits of the Spirit coming out. And again, we're not pursuing the fruits of the Spirit, we are pursuing them, but we're not spending time with Jesus to learn how to love more, but that just overflows out of us as we spend time with Jesus and we sit at his feet. And it can look so, in these days, it can look so weird, like what do you mean spending time at his feet or looking at his face? But it purely means just taking your time and spending time with him. Just sitting down and listening to what he has to say before anything else. And I will never want to get too busy with serving, or I will never want to get too busy with my day that I don't have time to listen to him. And I will never want to go and do so many things for him when he's asking me to be still, or I don't want to be still when he's asking me to go and do things for him and with him. And I think everything starts at the feet of Jesus. And Mary caught that, and she had such a special place in Jesus' heart, because she caught something, what's the most important thing. And we see Jesus defending her, saying, hey, Martha, like she got the right thing. She's doing the better thing, like she got it. Do not take this away from her. And again, we see Mary in John 11. I would like us to go there, if you have your Bibles. So this Lazarus, he was actually the brother of Mary and Martha, and he was very sick. So Mary and Martha, they send word to Jesus, and they say, hey, like, Lazarus is sick. Pretty much we want you to come and heal him. And then Jesus spends two more days where he was, and then he goes to Bethany where they were. And we look in John 11, verse 17. On his arrival, Jesus found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Which, by the way, 4 days in the, back in the day, in this context, 4 days, it meant for them that actually the soul left the body. Like for the Jews back then, when a person was dead for 4 days, then it was dead for good. Like this, it was considered the soul left his body. And I think it's very significant that Jesus came after 4 days. And now Bethany was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem, and many Jews had come to Martha and Mary to comfort them in the loss of their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed at home. It's, again, this is Mary that was sitting at the feet of Jesus, and I wonder why she stayed home. I was reading this passage this week, and I was wondering, like, what, Jesus, why did she stay home? Like, why didn't she come to greet you? Like, she was the one that was sitting at your feet. She was the one that was intimate with you. And I'm not sure why. Maybe she didn't know. Maybe she didn't want to. Maybe she was too broken by her brother's death that she didn't want to go. And then in verse 21, Lord, Martha said to Jesus, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask. Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. And Martha answered, I know he will rise again in the resurrection of the last day. Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this? Yes, Lord, she replied, I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, who is to come into the world. So this was Martha. Martha is coming to Jesus, right? The sister of Mary, she's coming to Jesus, and she's saying, Jesus, where were you? My brother died, and you are not here. But she had faith. She said, I believe that he's going to raise. I believe that you can do whatever you want. I believe that you can raise him from the dead. I believe that you are the Messiah. Martha comes to Jesus full of faith, and she's saying, hey, you are not here, but he died, but I know that you're the Messiah. And then verse 28, after she had said this, she went back and called her sister Mary aside. The teacher is here, she said, and he is asking for you. When Mary heard this, she got up quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet entered the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. When the Jews who had been with Mary in the house comforting her noticed how quickly she got up and went out, they followed her, supposing she was going to the tomb to mourn there. Now, just to paint the picture, like Mary was still in the house, and Martha comes to her. And imagine this, right? There were so many people there comforting them, and Martha comes, takes Mary aside, and she said, hey, Jesus, your lover, the one who you sat at his feet, he called for you. He asked specifically for you. He called you by name, and he wants you there. And Mary just, I can see like how her face just lit up and just got up and started running towards Jesus. And people were so, what's going on? Where is she going? We're going to follow her too. And then here it comes when Mary reaches the place where Jesus was. It says that she saw Jesus and she fell at his feet and said, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. And it's very interesting, again, Mary, first thing when she sees Jesus, she sits at his feet. It goes back to that intimate place, that represents the intimate place, right? That Jesus, here is where I belong. This is the best thing ever. Jesus already told her, you're doing good. Like, this is where you should sit, at my feet. And she goes back and she gets at Jesus' feet. And it's very interesting, the difference between Mary and Martha here. Because Martha said, I know that you can raise from the dead. I know that you're the Messiah. And Mary doesn't say that. She just goes to Jesus and says, hey, where were you? We called for you, and then you stay 2 more days there. And if you have been here, my brother wouldn't have died. And I think this is something so powerful of this message, where Mary just gets real with Jesus. And I think Jesus likes us when we get real with him. And she doesn't say, like, I know you can raise from the dead, which we know Jesus can do, and we believe that. But Mary, just in her brokenness, she just got intimate and real with Jesus. And she said, you see where I am? Like, my brother died, and you were not here. Where were you? Like, you are the one that I put all my trust in. You're the one that I love. You're the one that I sit at your feet. I sit and I trust in you with everything, and you did not come. And we sent word for you, but you stayed 2 more days and then you came. Like, where were you? And when Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. And he asked, where have you laid him? You know, we can move Jesus' heart. You know, we as lovers, we can actually move his heart. And he loves us when we move his heart. Like, what a privilege and what a joy and honor to be able to move the heart of the one who holds the whole universe, the heart of the one who created us. And he's moved by us. And here we see Jesus. He sees Mary weeping. And he's deeply moved in spirit and troubled. And then verse 35, it says, it's the shortest verse in the Bible, by the way, but it's so powerful. It says, Jesus wept. And I was thinking, I was like, Lord, why did you weep in that moment? Like, he couldn't have wept because Lazarus was dead, because he knew that he's going to raise from the dead. He said that earlier in this verse. He said that he's dead and I'm going to raise him from the dead. He couldn't have cried for Lazarus, or at least that's how I understand it. But I think something was moved in Jesus when he saw the heart of Mary so troubled, the one that's intimate with him, the one who chose to sit at his feet, and he saw her all weeping and asking, hey, Jesus, where are you? Where were you? Like, I put all my trust in you and you weren't here. And Jesus gets troubled and moved. And he starts crying. Like, imagine seeing the Messiah crying in that moment. The one who overcame that, he just starts crying because someone moved his heart. And that's who we are too. We're called to move his heart in the best way possible. Like, when we worship him, when we give him praise, when we do things to love on him, we move his heart. Like here, when we were in worship and the worship team is just going after the heart of Jesus, and we come all together and just give him glory and praise and joy and love, just love on him, just pour our love on him, he loves it. His heart is moved. He looks down to us and he just rejoices in his children. When you spend time in your intimate place and you just pour your love on him, he loves it. He created us to be intimate. He created us to ask hard questions. He created us to be in a loving, not boring relationship. If you think that Jesus is boring and if you think that having a relationship with Jesus is boring, I'm really sorry, but you haven't experienced Jesus in the fullness yet. You haven't experienced so many parts of his love. Because, oh man, the relationship that we have with Jesus is the most beautiful one that we can have. And he corrects us, and he loves us, and he's moved by us. He didn't create robots that he wants to serve. He created lovers. And we're first lovers. And out of being lovers, everything flows out. And if you never walked in the love of God, if you never experienced the love of God, or if you walked in it 50 years, there is more love for you. There is a deeper understanding of who Jesus is, and there is a deeper understanding of the cross for you today. So Jesus is crying, and then they go to the tomb of Lazarus, and he raises Lazarus from the dead. And unfortunately, in the Bible, it's not written how was Mary's reaction. I would have loved to see Mary jumping with joy in front of Jesus. But we don't have that. And he raises Lazarus from the dead. He raises the brother of Mary from the dead. And he showed up. And what it looked like for Mary that he was late, because it was after 4 days, and she knew, like, after 4 days, if Lazarus is dead, then now it's dead for sure. That's what it was considered on the fourth day. And she lost all her hope, and she thought Jesus is late, and she thought her lover might not be there, but I want to tell you that Jesus is never late, and he's always on time. And he loves us so much. And then there is only one response to this love of Jesus. And again, there is something special about Mary that she got it again, that there is only one response. And if we just flip the page to John 12. Jesus was in Bethany again. And from verse 2, it says that here a dinner was given in Jesus' honor. Martha served while Lazarus was among those reclining at the table with him. Then Mary, there is something about this Mary. She's so wild. She's always out of the box what she does. And she might seem so offensive, but, oh man, she caught something. Then Mary took about a pint of pure nard, an expensive perfume. She poured it on Jesus' feet and wiped his feet with her hair. And the house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. If you don't know about this pint of pure nard, it was considered to be a year worth of wages of a regular worker back in the day. It was something costly, and it was something that you hold it for a special occasion. It wasn't just like a simple perfume pouring on the feet of on Jesus. It was actually something very costly. And here's the reaction. But one of his disciples, Judas, who was later to betray him, objected, "Why wasn't this perfume sold and the money given to the poor? It was worth a year's wages." He did not say this because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief, a keeper of the money bag. He used to help himself to what was put into it. And there is Jesus, he's replied, once again defending her lover. And Jesus said, "Leave her alone. It was intended that she should save this perfume for the day of my burial. You will always have the poor among you, but you will not always have me." And also in Mark, when it when he speaks, it's written about these stories in Mark, it says that Jesus said that wherever the gospel is going to preach, this story is going to be preached in honor of her. And again, to paint a picture, now imagine being at the dinner. Imagine having Jesus in these days, and let's say me and my wife, we host the dinner, and we invite our friends, and we just want to honor Jesus because he's here, right? So we set up a nice table, we cook all the things, we make all the preparations, and we just go into a time of just honoring Jesus, like with our house, with our food. We just share stories about how much we love Jesus and what he did into our lives, and we just listen to him, to what he has to say to us. And then a person walks in, and she takes this very, very expensive perfume, and she just breaks it and pours it out on Jesus. And I always wonder, like, what would be my reaction if I would see this? And then not just that she does this, she goes and she takes Jesus' feet and she washes his feet with her hair. And it's so offensive, but Mary understood something, that Jesus is worth everything. That every sacrifice, that the most costly things that we have, he is worth everything. And there is one response to the cross, and there is one response to give him when we look at the cross, and that's to give him everything. And there is one response as we spend time with our lover and we understand the fullness of God and we see the fullness of his love, and we get his love revealed more and more. There is only one response, and that's just to pour out our most expensive perfume and to pour out our most expensive oil at his feet. And I pray that Maranatha Church and us as a body of Christ, that we'll be lovers that just pour the most expensive sacrifices at his feet. That says we live our lives, that we will just give him what costs us more. That whatever that looks into your life, that you would just give him more. That if it's your time, or if it's your dignity, or whatever it is, that we would just give him what costs us more. That we will grasp his love so deep that our only normal response would be to just give him everything. That we wouldn't be, I pray that us as a church, that Maranatha Church, we wouldn't be able to live our lives without responding to this love and this cross that Jesus gave for us. And he gave everything for us, and there is only one response left. Like, he gave everything, and you know it wasn't easy for him. Like, he was fully God and fully man, and it wasn't easy for him. Like, he's actually, the whole process of him getting murdered on that cross, it was brutal. Like, when you read the Bible, like, I can't even imagine a person going through something like that. It was really brutal. It wasn't something, oh, Jesus died on the cross for us. It was actually, it costed him the most. He gave everything. He gave the thing, he gave his life, the thing that he had the most, he gave it for us. And there is only one response to that. There is only one thing that we can give him. And let's go to Luke now. Luke 22, verse 39. And I just want to understand a bit of his of what it meant for him. And I love this passage because it shows the humanity of Jesus, and it shows that it wasn't easy for him to do this, that it wasn't just something that he went on and did it and That was it, simple. And verse 39, it says that Jesus went out as usual to the Mount of Olives, and his disciples followed him. On reaching the place, he said to them, "Pray that you will not fall into temptation." He withdrew about a stone's throw beyond them, knelt down and prayed, "Father, if you're willing to take this cup, if you're willing, take this cup from me, yet not my will be, but yours be done." An angel from heaven appeared to him and strengthened him. And being in anguish, he prayed more earnestly, and his sweat was like drops of blood falling to the ground. And here is Jesus before crucifixion, the Messiah, who was fully man and fully God, and he sits down in prayer and he says, "God, this is really hard. This is not something easy that I want to do, but your will be done." And here's Jesus saying, like, "God, I need strength. I can't do this by myself. I can't go here by myself. Like, this is something hard. I need strength." And an angel came and strengthened him. And he says here that his sweat was like drops of blood falling to the ground. I can't even imagine that. Like, most of the times when I pray, unfortunately, I don't even sweat that much, but I can't believe Jesus having sweat that was like drops of blood falling to the ground. And then he goes on and he dies. And I was reading about his process of getting to the hill of crucifixion, and again it was brutal and it was hard. And I think there was one thing that was holding him. I think there was one thing that kept him going. And I feel like as he was walking up the hill, he was like, "God, this is hard. God, this is hard. But I look at Ezra and I want him to live fully free and want him to live fully in love. I look at Linus and I want him to be fully in intimacy with me. I want him to understand how much I love him." And again, it was so brutal, but he was, "I look at Logan and I want her to live fully in freedom and fully in joy. I want her to understand how much I love her. I want her to have full intimacy with him, with me." And he gave the biggest love that you could ever give to die for us. And he said that there's no greater love than to die for one another. And then he went on and he proved it to us. Like, he gave everything for us to be able to commune with him. He gave everything for us to have union with him. He gave everything for us to have intimacy with him. He gave everything for us to have someone to go to when we have our lowest days, and someone to go to when we have our highest days. He loves to hear our lows and our highs. He loves to hear our stories. He loves to hear the things that we love and the things that we dislike. He loves to be intimate with us. And then he goes to the cross, and as I was reading this, I realized that Jesus bled it out of seven parts, and at least this is how much I found. But he was crucified, and his hands were pierced on the cross, and he bled it out of his hands, that whatever we're gonna make and whatever our hands are gonna create or whatever our hearts are gonna touch are gonna be covered by his love. And then he bled it out of his feet, that wherever we're gonna go, wherever we're going to put our foot on, it's going to be covered out of his love, and it's going to be covered out of his blood. And then he bled it. He was whipped. I can't even imagine someone being whipped, but he was being whipped. He was being tortured. And he had scars that whatever we're going to go through or whatever sickness is going to come against us, it's going to be covered by his blood and by his love. And he bled it out of his side, and he was pierced on his side with a spear, that whatever will come against us and whatever is going to try and touch us, we're going to be covered by his love. And whatever is happening to us, we have a lover to go to over and over again that has everything. And he had a crown of thorns on his head while he was sitting on the cross. And he bleated out of his head that whatever is going to go in our head, whatever we're going to think, whatever we're going to go through in our mind over and over again, it's covered by his blood and covered by his love. Like dying on the cross, he covered everything. Everything that we could ask for, everything that we could need. He went on and he died on the cross just to give us everything. And now again, after he gave everything, we need to give everything back. Like imagine someone giving everything to have someone to love on him and have someone to love him and not do anything and not respond. Like again, it's not a boring life with Jesus. Like if you think it's a boring life again, like we need more of his love. Like it's so much fun. Like it's so amazing to have someone to have someone who's always there. Like he's not meant to be worshipped on Sunday and to talk to him on Sunday. He's meant to be talked every day and every single time of the day. He's meant he died and he paid this price. So whatever is gonna happen, we can talk to him. Like he pay this price, so whatever will happen, he's the first one to go and share, Jesus, look what I experienced today. Look what amazing thing happened to me today. Or someone that we go to and say, Jesus, what is happening? Look this horrible thing happened to me today. And I don't understand you. I don't understand it. I need you. And he's the most intimate lover that we could ever ask for. And I remember I was I saw this week a picture on my phone, and I have this widget on my phone where it appears from time to time, like 2 years ago or 3 years ago, and I see pictures and moments that happened 3 years ago. So it was now, I think it was 4 years ago, and I see these pictures and I click on it and I found a picture of myself, and I was laying on the in a parking lot and I was looking at the stars kind of. And that reminded me of an encounter that I had with Jesus that I would like to share it today. And can we actually get someone on the piano? I'm not sure where Teresa is. Okay, thank you, Teresa. Because I want to just go into a time after to just minister unto the Lord. But I remember this encounter that I had with the Lord, and I was in ministry school, and we were supposed to do ministry at a conference. So what would happen, the conference was happening in a room, and they would be in the same building in another room. We will watch the conference on a big screen. And then just getting filled with the Spirit and praying for each other and listening to the conference. And then we'll go and be the ministry team. So it was 100 people in that room ready to minister. And we were worshiping Jesus. And as we were worshiping him, I just have this image of tree. And I see this tree, out of this tree there was a liquid falling. And as I see this image, I just kind of put my head back and I open my mouth. I see this liquid coming into me. And as this liquid was coming, I just felt the love of Jesus filling me up. And I knew that this liquid represents the love of Jesus flowing into me. And I just start to get so in awe by who Jesus is. I couldn't understand, and I was looking at every detail in my life, and I would see the love of Jesus over it. And I was looking how he was there with me in every moment of my life, and I kept receiving this love, and I kept receiving this love. And these words came out of me, just drink from the tree, and I started to sing this song about drinking from the tree, which is something that I normally don't do, but I was so overwhelmed with his love. And then I had my friend, it was a friend next to me, and we were both getting filled with the love. And then we go downstairs, and we could barely walk because we were so overwhelmed with his love. Like we couldn't comprehend how big his love is. And we both go there at the ministry time and we minister to people, and as we pray for people, just love flows out. And we see people just filling with the love of Jesus over and over again. And His love is just flowing out and flowing out and flowing out. And the ministry time ends and we just lay back and we just keep drinking of this love that He gave for us. And we just sat there and just drinking His love and couldn't stop. It's been already probably 3 hours that we've been drinking out of His love. And we couldn't stop because it was something that was so overwhelming and so... we couldn't comprehend how Jesus can love us so much. And I think there's a deeper revelation of the love of Jesus today. And as we go out, it was a bit harder to walk, so my friends helped me a bit to my car. And I remember I see this picture, the one that I shared earlier, and I see this picture, and my friends leave me at my car to get in my car and drive home. And I remember as I opened the door and I want to get into the car, I look at the stars and I get so overwhelmed with the stars. I couldn't believe that someone can create these beautiful stars. And as I look at it, I just get filled with the love of Jesus over and over again. And I look at His creation and I'm like, Jesus, how can You make something so beautiful? How is this possible that something can be so beautiful? You're so good. You're so amazing. How can You love us so much that You will create something so beautiful? And there's this picture that I just saw this week, and I was in the parking lot with the car door open. I was laying down on my back and I was looking at the stars, and I probably sat there for 20 minutes just being in awe with the love of Jesus. And then my friends, they were very kind and they drove me home, and they helped me to get into the house, and they left me in the couch in my living room, and I just couldn't comprehend His love. And I remember just sitting there and receiving His love. And I remember just sitting there and things that were broken into my heart and things that I couldn't understand and things that I was mad about that they are happening to me, they just start to make sense. Sufferings and pains that I had into my heart, they just started to fade away. And Jesus just kept filling me with His love over and over again. And then I remember, I don't really like to dance. It's not necessarily my strength. I'm not very good at it. But I remember in that time when I was just filled with Jesus' love, Jesus takes me and he says to me that He wants to dance with me. And we danced into that living room, into the kitchen. It was already like 12 a.m. and we danced for an hour and a half, I think. That was the longest I ever danced in my life. And He just took me around and toured me around and around and around. And it sounds super weird for me, but He was filling me with love. I was so overwhelmed by His love that I couldn't stop dancing with Him. And for an hour and a half, we just danced and danced and danced into this living room. And then again, sitting down and just being overwhelmed with His love. And then I wake up the next morning and the only thing that can come out of me is love. The only thing that I can think about is love, and I couldn't understand why would someone sacrifice so much for me. And my only response was to love on Him and love on Him and love on Him. And I feel like there's a deeper understanding of His love today for us. And can I have the worship team to come up, please? And I feel there is a deeper understanding of His love today. And I want to repeat this because I think it's very important. He didn't create us as robots that would just go ahead and do the work. We do the work, but He created us as lovers first. And by the way, if you're struggling with sin today and you feel like you don't deserve His love, I just want to tell you that there is love for you. If last night you messed up, I just want to tell you that there is love for you. And you just need to lay back and receive it. And if you are struggling with sin, I feel like we need to change our perspective of Him, that we're not sinners that struggle to love Jesus and strive to love Jesus anymore, that once you gave to life to Him, you're a lover that sometimes struggles with sin. And if you feel like you don't receive His love tonight, I'm sorry, but he decided that you do. On the cross, he decided that you do. So there's nothing that can stop you from receiving love today.